From the Pavilion on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Hello and welcome to the last From the Pavilion lockdown podcast of this season, hopefully. On today's episode, Callum Guest and I are joined by Foxton duo Ravi Mahendra and Craig Park, who also plays for Cambridgeshire. We'll be chatting stiff legs and achy arms after clubs got their whites back on for the first time last weekend, and we'll be running through the formats of both the East Anglia Premier League and the Whitings divisions. We'll be asking, did Stuart Broad throw his toys out the pram, and picking our ones to watch in England's 24-man ODI training group. Craig will also be revealing his fantasy slip cordon, made up of famous faces and one cricketer only. If you want to contribute to the show, you can do at FTP Cricket 105 on both Twitter and Facebook. Thanks very much for tuning in. My name is Ollie Slack. Now, I said it's the last FTP lockdown podcast of the season. Well, hopefully it is, because next week, next Wednesday, we'll be back on air on Cambridge 105 Radio in our usual slot at 6 p.m. Now the cricket is right back up and running. Delighted to welcome on to this podcast, though, as ever, my co-host Callum Guest. Thanks for coming on the show, Callum.
Thanks, mate. Cheers.
And also great to have on a Foxton duo this week, Ravi Mahendra and Craig Park too.
Hi, guys.
Before we come on to anything cricket, Callum, on the video call, well, you're certainly not in Ireland anymore, I can put it that way.
No, made my way back Sunday night, managed to get the last flight out of Ireland, so I'm back in Cambridge, just currently staying in a travel lodge, so a bit interesting, but no, it's good to be back.
I do like travel, I have to say, but a weird fascination with Premier Inns or travel lodges, but it looks quite a nice one behind you.
Yeah, I think the rim's all right.
That's his own image, his own not painting, sure. You had to bring it in.
Yeah. Not sure I'll venture too much out of the room, but yeah, it's all good.
Central Cambridge Travel Lodge, but say the Wi-Fi hopefully will prove a lot stronger. You don't get one of those like free 30 minutes and then it's going to cut out in about 10 minutes, is it?
That's what it's done, 30 minutes. So I'm just hotspotting off my phone now.
Okay.
Worked around that. I've seen the free 30 minutes and I thought, oh, that's no good for me.
No. Craig, again, before we talk cricket, do you know the last time that we had you on the show? Can you remember?
No.
You can't. It was the show after England won the Cricket World Cup.
Yes, I do remember that, actually. A video came up on my Facebook this morning from that day, which I'll share again.
You mean from the day of England winning the World Cup, not just the day you phoned into the podcast?
No, the video of England winning the World Cup. So yeah, I'll share that. I'll share the video of South Africa winning the Rugby World Cup as well, just to even things up.
Keep a nice balance, we like that.
Yeah.
But what were your memories from the day England won the World Cup? I mean, you were at Lords. That's why we had you on the show.
Yes, yeah. I was helping with all the net bowling and training sessions and things. So on the day of the final, probably for the last 20 overs or so, the guys in the office, we managed to sneak out. Well, not sneak out, but managed to go and find a seat behind the side screen to watch the ending, which was brilliant. And then managed to nab myself a cover pass to be able to get up next to the covers and, get front row seats on the grass. So, yeah, it was brilliant. It was really good.
Lovely.
Albeit an England victory.
You sound bitter.
No, I noticed you wearing the shirt.
I am, yeah, exactly. No listeners will be able to tell, but I've gone full throttle and worn England's winning World Cup shirt today. No one else is dressed up for the occasion. But of course, again, we're recording this on the 14th on Tuesday, so it is a year to the day that England won the World Cup. Callum, what were your memories from the day?
I can't really remember. I'm not sure if it was a couple of beers that I might have had after, but I can't really remember too much about it. Obviously, the game was a fantastic spectacle. I'm not sure you could probably write a better World Cup ending, especially being on the winning side of it as well as an England fan. I suppose the Kiwis probably have a slightly different picture of the day, but no, it's a good advert for cricket.
Yeah, Ravi, what were your memories from the day? Like Callum said, a brilliant spectacle.
It was quite a surreal day, actually, because Willow and I were taking the Cams under 17s at March, and obviously it was on terrestrial TV then, so we had it on in the clubhouse, but it sort of, the ending to that game coincided with the ending to our game against Norfolk, and I think we were coming down to the end of the game against Norfolk. And it was at the point where the ball ricocheted off Ben Stokes' bat and went for four. We lost a wicket. And obviously everyone in the clubhouse is celebrating and screaming. Willow, I think, ran out, jumping with his hands aloft, only to see one of our boys walk back in. And I think we were down to 9 and we ended up losing the game. But no, it was a amazing, amazing day. Amazing, yeah, like you said, advert for cricket.
The poor lad who got out, what's going on?
Just heard the clubhouse screaming up and down. And,
Exactly, yeah. Craig, actually being at Lords, of course, I was there as well, but working there and getting the atmosphere, and of course, like, you were there for probably the majority of the build-up as well, helping out with the net bowling. Could you really feel it start to build, and then obviously the grand occasion of the final?
It was an incredible buzz, to be fair. They had these really cool paratrooper guys with flares and things coming, and it was just amazing, like a good start, like all these helicopters and parachutes coming down with smoke bomb things. Yeah, just the whole build up to everything, like there was such a buy-in to the whole, you know, the whole day, obviously given that England were there as well. But yeah, I mean, like Esty says, you couldn't have scripted it any better. Like, just everything went the way we wanted it, or the way, you know, England wanted it to go. And it was a good ending. And obviously off the back of that, there was a bit of momentum, and then it's kind of sort of died down with how, you know, this whole situation has taken to effect, and, you know, they haven't been able to fully capitalize on the whole victory and stuff. So that is a bit of a shame.
Yeah, I guess we'll never know, will we, potentially the real true impact of it, because like you say, if the stuttering nature of 2020 so far, and they haven't really been able to carry on that momentum. I've got one story from the Cricket World Cup final that I'll keep very, very brief for you. I was a volunteer for the final and the match day minus one, which is the day before the final. And it was absolutely crazy. All the people around me, the media guys, didn't even realise it was going to go to a super over. So when it did, we won. Absolutely crazy. Euphoric. Players were running around the pitch right in front of me. I couldn't believe it. Fans behind me going berserk. I was sort of situated just in between the fans and the photographers, so on that sort of gap between the boundary and then the stands. And I was looking around for someone to sort of celebrate with, and the only person right next to me was the man who was looking after us volunteers and the photographers, so a pretty senior guy. Turn around to him, total elation, he's deadpan, he's a Kiwi. He was not happy at all. And there's a couple of photographers who were right on the end, who this guy, this Kiwi, hadn't dealt with before. They come from overseas, so he wasn't too familiar with them. So he wanted me to sort of keep close tabs on him. The players started coming over. He got a bit nervous and he grabbed hold of me and said, go look over there and sort of do your job. And I was like, mate, we just won the Cricket World Cup, for goodness sake. And yeah, he was asking me to do a job and look after these photographers whilst the players were celebrating in front of me. But anyway, it was an incredible experience. Very, very surreal. And so yeah, a year on, incredible, really. And to think England's ODI team, they've named their 24-man squad, and it looks very, very different indeed. We'll come on to that a little bit later on and chat England. But let's chat about recreational cricket. Of course, teams, clubs up and down the country were back in action on the weekend for the very first time. Let's start with you guys at Foxton, Ravi and Craig. Were you involved in any cricket over the weekend?
I'll go first. So I've obviously just got back from the Azores. I was stuck over there for 4 months, so I'm currently quarantining. I'll only be available on the 25th. So yeah, I missed last weekend. I'll miss the first weekend of the league and then be back on the 25th. But Ravi was there, so he can tell you more.
What was it like, Ravi?
Yeah, it was really good, actually. So so we played against Cambridge Cricket Club at the Perth School, it was great to just to get back on the field again. We played a bit of a strange format, so we played a 40-over game, which was split down into two 20-over innings. Cambridge had about 15, 16 players. We had about 12 as well.
Yeah.
So it's a good way of sort of rotating and sort of managing the game in that way. But yeah, like I said, it was just great. I think everyone just really enjoyed getting back out there again. We had a good net session before the game started. And then, yeah, just got out and played, which was good fun. Good to see some youngsters from Foxton playing as well. We had two new youngsters that joined the club. So good to see them playing. And yeah, great to see the guys at Cambridge as well. It was a good social as well. I think everyone sort of gets on quite well from both clubs, so that was a positive.
Good. I was going to ask if there were stiff legs and stiff arms the next day, but given you said it was a bit of a social, was there a bit of a stiff head as well the next day?
No, we only managed to sneak in one at the Earl of Derby after. They're very strict guidelines there as well. We had to sit in groups of four, so that was an anti-social social, I guess, after the game. But But no, there's definitely some stiff bodies, people flying around in the field as well. I reckon Craig will be astonished to hear that. I think that we fielded actually really well on the day, because Foxton aren't really renowned for their fielding, as I'm sure if you listen to Jason and
Jason Coleman effect.
Yeah.
When the ball goes up in the air and you've got Jason Coleman going, catch it, everybody panics.
No one wants to drop anything off his bowling. But no, we fielded really well. I think, again, having two youngsters in the side definitely helped bring the average age and the quality of fielding.
Great to hear. Callum, I was going to ask a general question about return to cricket without playing for so long. What are the things that cricketers may struggle to pick up straight away if they haven't had much net practice or played many games? I think Ebony Rainford-Brent was saying on the on Sky's coverage of the Windies game that when she first came back to start the new season, she really threw her hands at the ball and struggled to play it late. What do you reckon some of the things cricketers would be finding tricky to grasp straight away?
It's just movements and stuff. As a batsman, it's probably just trigger movements. And like she said, you do tend to go a bit harder at the ball just because you want to feel that the bat and ball. Yeah, she's probably right there. And then bowlers, I think it's probably, you can do as much fitness as you want in lockdown, but it's nothing quite like bowling fitness. I went for a couple of beers with Timmy last night, and he said that he's never felt so stiff in his life. And he said, the embarrassing thing is I've had 7 overs the whole weekend. And he said, I literally can't move today. So I think it just shows you. And he said, I've been doing a little bit of fitness during lockdown, but I said, there's nothing quite like overs in the legs when you're running in and obviously giving it your all into the crease. So it is a completely different kind of fitness that you probably can't replicate any way other than bowling, repeating, bowling. So I suppose for a bowler, it's probably a bit harsher on the body. Batting's more of a timing thing. So obviously the more you're batting, well, hopefully the easier it'll get and the less likely you'll get out early.
You'd hope. Craig, how should clubs approach these sort of potential 5 or 6 games that they're going to have? How will Foxton be approaching it? Potentially, I guess Callum said, obviously no Matt Haig for Source, and the lack of an overseas means there might be some youngsters who get a chance. Should clubs be not rotating players but giving youngsters a chance anyway in these sort of 5 or 6 games, given they don't really mean anything?
Yeah, definitely. It's a perfect opportunity for them. Obviously, in the Whitings League, there's no, from what I understand, there's no relegation or promotion. So, you know, it's a good opportunity to try new players, try new sort of bowling combinations if you are sort of, you know, you have that luxury where you've got more than 3 seamers, unlike Foxton. But yeah, it is a good opportunity. Play some fearless cricket, just go out and enjoy the season and, you know, wait for the next season.
I'm sure that wait will hopefully go by quite quickly, but given the lack of cricket this season, it'll probably take a bit of a while. Let's run through the formats then. Start with the East Anglia Premier League. Callum, you're the man to talk about this. I believe it's a limited over competition split into 2 groups of North and South, which commences on the Saturday 25th of July. Coloured clothing and pink balls will also be used. The North group contains Burwell and Lexing, Cambridge, Great Witchingham, Horsford, Mildenhall and Swarton. The South group contains Bury St Edmunds, Copdock and Old Ipswichian, Frinton-on-Sea, Saffron Walden, Sudbury and your team, Sawston and Babraham.
I really like the format, the competition they put together. They had 3 options that clubs could vote on, and I think that was the unanimous decision to get back playing. I think, like we spoke before, it's about playing as much cricket as possible. When it's finishing as well, means that there is a potential, I feel, to have a T20 comp in September alongside that. So, like I said, the more cricket, the better, obviously. It's kind of been forced on secretaries to try and get the boys out there. So I think they've done as good as they can in the situation.
Yeah, so that is the formula they're going after. And I guess I think like we touched on before, it's a little bit potentially a glimpse into the future with what could be in place going forward. I think obviously coloured clothing and pink balls is always going to take part in the East Anglia Premier League. But having a whole season of it potentially sort of realigns maybe the focus or what players really want to play.
Yeah, I'm not sure the old pink ball is going to encourage too many seamers to start taking up bowling.
Have you played a bit much? Because obviously it's played with quite a bit, obviously test cricket now, but
university stuff, they use the Kookaburra pink ball for all the uni stuff, and honestly it literally lasts for 2 overs and then it's just no thank you, no more seam. So
Raj Singh's worst nightmare, that isn't it?
Yeah, I think
pink ball in the Premier League.
He starts peeling off after the first time he hits the bat, and that's when you know it's going to pop.
In fact, before we chat about the Whitings, just a quick chat about actual cricket and playing then, Callum. Bury, Frinton and Sudbury, all previous winners of the East Anglia Premier League in your South group. Of course, Frinton won it 2019, Sudbury in 18 and 17, so it looks pretty tough. But how do you see it going?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's been tough. No easy fixtures, is there, in the Premier League? So I feel like, yeah, it'd be a good test, really good test. Obviously, we got Haggy's potentially not coming over. I'm not quite sure. You never are quite sure with that bloke, because he could just easily turn up at Heathrow one day and go, by the way, I need picking up. So obviously, we need to fill his void. But there's some good talent that obviously could get an opportunity. Like Parky said, a few boys lower down the order could go up. More than capable of scoring the run, so yeah, it'd be tough.
We'll see how you go. All the best when it eventually gets going. Let's chat about Whitings then. In the Division 1, I believe there's 8 teams, 7 games or 40 overs, colour kits and a pink ball used also. Out of the 10 teams that are usually in Whitings 1, so Cambridge, Cambridge St Giles, Eton Socon, Foxton, Histon, March, Ramsey, St Ives Town and Warboys, Stamford and Wisbeach. The two that have dropped out to make it an 8-team league is Stamford and Ramsey. The top 4 out of the 8 teams then enter a playoffs, 1v4 and 2v3. In Division 2 and 3, it's slightly different. It's been localised and there's 2 groups of 4 and 1 group of 7. The winners of the groups of 4 play the top 2 in the group of 7. Again, creates a 4-team playoff scenario. Again, a different type of schedule, a different type of format, understandable because you've got to then adapt for other leagues. And of course, some teams dropped out in Ramsey and Stamford's case. But Ravi, have I got that right? Have I covered the ground?
I think so. That's what we got sent through as well this morning. So yeah, I think you're spot on. So yeah, nice to see that there's some sort of alignment with what's being released. But yeah.
Good to hear. How do you see the format going? Do you like what you see?
I think they've done a really good job in producing a schedule like that at such short notice. I think have the creativity as well to have that sort of the localised leagues, I think, lower down, I think will massively help. And I think make it competitive for Whiting 1 and having the semi-finals and grand final at the end is important as well. I think, obviously, you know, we could have just organised a load of friendlies and sort of gone on with it that way, but making it competitive in a league and having that semi-final and final, I think whilst, you know, there's no relegation or promotion, I think it's still important to have that competitive element because people want to be going out and playing competitive cricket ultimately on a Saturday, especially in Whiting's leagues and definitely in the APL.
Craig, the playoff system, are you a fan of it? Do you quite like it being introduced in a regular league season?
I am a fan, yes. I like the limited overs approach and the, you know, the knockout type approaches. You know, when you got leagues playing a bit like EAPL where you've got half the format where you're playing for draws and things, it does breed a form of negative cricket. So I do like the competition, the knockouts, the group stages where there's something to play for, and you know, every game brings a result. That's a good approach.
Of course, colour kits was coming into the Whitings this year, I think, for the first time. Does it ever change your approach? I mean, someone who's never played in colour kit, but psychologically, if you've got sort of nice fancy colour clothing on, a pink ball coming down at you, does it change? I know you might play the same time, 40 overs or 50 overs at a Red Bull game in whites, but does it change psychologically, Ravi, the way you'd potentially go about it at all?
Well, we will never know this year because we cancelled our colour kit order after we found out about the lockdown. So we might be the only team playing in whites this year, which might be a bit of a bitch. I mean, I'll let Craig answer that one. He's played probably a bit more colour kit clothing than I have.
I think it does, actually. I think the whole you kind of feel like you've gone up a level. The intensity increases. I guess you will say it as well. I think just the whole team buzz around, you know, you're playing one day format, you're in coloured clothing, everything just seems to pick up a notch.
It feels like you're more of it feels like you are a bit more professional. It just feels like the whole game, the black side screens, everything's a bit more professional. I remember when I first started playing coloured kit, and everyone kind of done it, but everyone thinks they're Brendan McCullum when they go out to bat. They try and aim, instead of just aiming for your typical 230, 240 in league cricket, which we'll probably see over the line most weeks, teams will start ending trying to get 350. Power play, we need to be 120 for one off of 10 overs. And it's like, that is how it goes. And then it takes a while to realise that actually it's just still league cricket.
And it's still a lot of time to play as well. 40 overs. It's a long time. So you try and race out the blocks and end up being 20 for four. And then recovering for the rest of the day. So, yeah.
On a from a cause obviously coaching in schools and the stuff I do with CAMs, like I think from the kids' point of view, they love playing a coloured kit. I think that's certainly a way, I think, of moving forward with schoolboy cricket and county cricket, of sort of, you know, encapsulating the that sort of energy and yeah, buzz about the game. I think that's certainly an important part of which could be brought in lower down. And yeah, like I said, at school we get the coloured kit, we get the music out as well for some T20s, and the kids really love that. It's nice to be a part of, actually, creates a really good atmosphere.
Certainly imagine. And to be honest, I think even at, say, if you go down the CCA leagues, then into senior and junior, I've often said you might as well make them colour kits and maybe a slightly shorter format, just because I imagine kids aren't, you know, young kids who play in the village for clubs, they're not going to come in straight away at Whiting's level. They're probably going to play a few games in the junior and senior leagues straight away, and that's going to be definitely more of a pull for them if they see some lads running around in colour kits and slightly more explosive than your stereotypical Saturday afternoon with some older guys running around in whites and quite a slow pace, put it that way anyway. But we'll see. Of course, we don't know whether any of these formats or schedules or kits etc. will be brought into what we hope will be a full season next year, but I guess we'll have to wait and see if the players want it, and then there's enough, imagine, pressure, I guess, then hopefully it might be brought in. Just before we move on to England, of course, no saliva or sweat being allowed to use. It's just no saliva in international cricket. They are allowed to use sweat, but no sweat even in recreational cricket. So I can't imagine how you'll be able to shine the ball, but is that going to be a challenge, Callum?
I'm quite sweaty, so... Yes, there's not a chance I'm not going to be able to get sweat on the ball. So then I might be written off before I've even played. Yeah, I didn't actually know it was no sweat in league cricket. I'm pretty sure, I don't want to throw anyone under the bus, but I'm pretty sure the lads were using sweat the other day on the Sunday.
How on earth are they going to manage that, though?
Straight under that. Well, yeah, that's the other thing. How are they going to enforce these rules? Bearing in mind, everyone's got to stay 2 metres apart anyway, in terms of people that are going to try and, you know, take you off the field.
It's got to be led by the umpire. So the game we played on Saturday, so we all rocked up and everyone was sort of like, well, what's going on? And everyone was sort of a bit oblivious to really what was, you know, what the protocols were and what was put in place. So I think it's definitely got to be led by the umpires, and having the break every, is it 6 overs or 20 minutes or something? Yeah, we did that, and you know, had a quick, rather than have a quick water break, everyone's coming on with the hand gel. That's quite a different sort of drinks break to have. But and the running between the wickets as well, with the 2 metre rule, I think the umpires sort of were quite hot on that at the weekend as well. So they were telling people to make sure they run down the side of the wicket rather than running across. And yeah, so it is going to have to be led by the umpires. I think we have to take quite a strong stance.
Well, we'll see how that goes. When it comes to them bowling, of course, with no saliva or sweat, does that mean potentially, because we've got a pink ball as well, and Callum said the shine goes off within 2 overs, that's where your skills come in with your variations, your cutters, cross seam, etc.?
Yeah, you feel sorry for the guys who just run up and bowl dibbly dobblers with no variations, because they'll go the distance. But generally speaking, yeah, if you've got some skills and you can mix it up and bowl to your fields, then you're gonna do well. And the other thing I like about the limited overs formats is that you don't have to rely on one or two players. You know, you need 5 bowlers or you need 6 bowlers to get the overs in. You need a full side. You know. You don't rely on 2 or 3 players. So, yeah, if you've got skillful bowlers who can bowl slower balls and cutters and things, then you're definitely going to do a lot better than in those one-dimensional teams.
Well, best of luck to all of you who are starting this weekend. I think, Callum, you're a week after, and likewise myself. But, yeah, best of luck to both you guys at Foxton and all the club cricketers listening who are getting underway for proper competitions this weekend.
From the Pavilion on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Let's move on to the England chat now and talk about the Test match against West Indies. And before we go into any sort of debate or analysis, I have to say it was a fantastic Test match between the two sides, and credit to the West Indies and England for getting it on. The West Indies, of course, for coming over to England playing it. And also Sky as well did a brilliant job broadcasting it with some fantastic features. And especially the one that I think got everyone talking was Michael Holding's piece and Ebony Rainford's Brent piece, and the opening day was really, really terrific. With regards to the cricket, though, Callum, how would you rate England's performance out of 10?
It's not very high. probably give them a 3, 4.
Really? That low?
Yeah, they got outplayed for the whole test match. I feel like there was only two periods in the game when they were actually probably slightly in charge. I feel like West Indies played a really good game of cricket.
Ravi, Craig, are you slightly more, slightly nicer than Callum's mark, or are you with him down in the 3-4 area?
I think 4 or 5 is a decent score. I think England's batting was the main issue. I think when you see, players scoring 30s and 40s in test match cricket is not good enough. So I think that's where they were let down.
Yeah, I'd probably agree. I wouldn't go quite as harsh as Guesty, but I thought, they played well in for some sessions. I think it was a bit more even, I think, than perhaps we maybe think. But yeah, I think they were let down with the bat. And I guess we'll talk about the selection in a minute. But maybe with the ball as well, they could have chosen a slightly different balanced attack, perhaps.
Well, I think the good thing about the test just gone is if you look at the stronger performers, the real youngsters in the side, so I think you'd take positives out of Burns and Sibley's opening partnership in the second innings, getting 40 and Sibley 50. Zach Crawley getting runs as well. Ollie Pope, unfortunately, didn't really get going, but Don Best did a decent job in the first innings, didn't really turn much for him in the second innings, but looked a little bit threatening. And then you look at Jofra bowling an absolutely brilliant spell in the second innings as well. The youngsters really standing up and being counted for. And I think that's what you like about this England side. If there's an England side to get behind, it's this one, because they are going with youth. They're going with players who've toiled away in the championship for years, the majority of them. So they should be, in my eyes, given a chance. But of course, the biggest talking point, I think, was probably off the field or in the player zone, as they were calling it on Sky, was with Stuart Broad's interview. Just to check I'm outnumbered here, which I think I probably will be. Craig, Ravi, Callum, did you think it was a good interview or a slightly dodgy bad one? Craig, we'll start with you.
I thought it was fine. Like, obviously, some people kicked off on Twitter about, him showing a lot of disrespect and it was, unforgivable what he said and all that. But, I mean, he was disappointed and angry for being left out, which you want. Like, you don't want him going, oh, it's fine, just play the next one or whatever. he's obviously still got a lot of passion and he's still a very, very good bowler. So it's good that he had, that passion and disappointment that he was left out.
Yeah, I think he was right, about spot on. I think he didn't overstep the mark. He voiced his frustrations and I think ultimately we want players to be honest, don't we? We don't want to, when they interview, you don't want to hear the same sort of dribble over and over again. You want to hear, what players are thinking a lot of the time. And as long as they're not overstepping the mark and, like we said, being disrespectful to the management and the captain in Ben Stokes, I think you want to see that passion in the game. I thought it was okay, personally.
Absolutely fine with me. He's a professional sportsman. He's nearly taken 600 test wickets. Was the leading wicket taker in South Africa, like they said. And I think that's what kind of riled him up as well. One of the first questions was, if it was a batsman who had been the leading run scorer, would they get dropped as well? Mm. And I think that started it off. I think that's a bit of red mist mess ended. But it is true. It wouldn't happen. Although Peterson may argue that he was the leading run scorer in Australia and he got dropped. So there is that. Obviously, that's a separate issue.
Well, it does appear I'm outnumbered. Let me tell you why I found it. I think the word's an uncomfortable interview to watch. Now, Stuart Broad is a clever man. He knows that people will be asking questions of Ben Stokes because he's dropped Stuart Broad and also because he chose to bat in pretty gloomy conditions. And then for him to come out and say it's quite a hard decision to understand, I think that is chucking Ben Stokes under the bus a little bit. And it left Stokes having to, try and deflect a question away in the post-match interview. So I think he was chucking his toys out the pram a little bit. But the main point I want to get as well is he said, I wanted clarification on the future going forward. So upon finding out that he wasn't selected, Broad then asked Ed Smith for clarification of his future. And, slightly over the top, Craig, it's one test match. And, I think he downplayed the competition in the side, just saying that England have got fit bowlers. But there is a really, really strong group of healthy fast bowlers in that team now.
Yeah, I think obviously Broad is not exactly at the start of his career. He's only got a couple of seasons of test match cricket left, if we're honest. I think he just wants a bit of clarity, on where he sits within that bowling unit.
But just after one game?
I think given after one game, it probably was a little bit too premature. but you know, he clearly wants to know where he stands within that unit, and couldn't quite get the answer. So yeah.
Mm. With regards to England's decision behind it was because they went horses for courses with the pitch. They wanted to pick the bowling attack they did on the conditions. And of course, Stuart Broad wasn't too happy about that. But they went horses for courses, thought the pitch would break up on day five. Turned out to be day four, really, with not getting any action on day one. But are you happy with England doing that, going horses for courses and just picking their bowling attack on the conditions?
So, yeah, I think it's important with the amount of bowlers that they have who are, you know, ready to play Test cricket, that they do select bowlers on the conditions, and having a varied attack to cover all bases, I think, is important. When you play in the subcontinent, in Australia, South Africa, you need bowlers with different skill sets. So I think assessing a situation, assessing a pitch, is making the correct decision based on that is important. I think encouraging the promotion of that amongst the sort of England line set up in France is also key.
The same issues happened again. It was a bit of a, there's always a collapse every test match. It feels like there's a collapse of some sort, and we let the opposition into the game. Whereas the really good test teams of the past, they wouldn't let you do that.
No, I think you're right. But we've got to remember, Chris Silverwood took over as head coach in the winter, and the thing he wanted to get across, he wanted his England players to bat time. Now, that's not going to happen overnight. And I'll take you back to the first test of the Ashes last summer. Jason Roy, Johnny Bairstow, Moeen Ali and Jos Buttler at five were in the batting order there. And you could argue they're potentially four white ball specialists. So if you look at the England team now, you've got county cricketers in there who've toured away for years, who are prepared to bat time, young lads as well. So I think we as fans should give them time and patience, really, to show us that they can do what Silverwood has asked them to. Let's hope then they can bounce back against West Indies in the second test, which starts today. Slightly different chat about England now, a different format. They've announced a 24-man ODI squad. I'll quickly run through the names. This might take me the rest of the show. But they've got Owen Morgan, Moeen Ali, Johnny Bairstow, Tom Banton, Sam Billings, Henry Brooks, Brydon Carse, Tom Curran, Liam Dawson, Ben Duckett, Laurie Evans, Richard Gleeson, Lewis Gregory, Sam Hain, Tom Helm, Liam Livingston, Saqib Mahmood, Matthew Parkinson, Adil Rashid, Jason Roy, Phil Salt, Rhys Topley, James Vince and David Willey. Seven players who have uncapped for England in the ODI side. Henry Brooks, Brydon Carse, Laurie Evans, Richard Gleeson, Lewis Gregory, yet to play an ODI match. Sam Hain, Tom Helm, Liam Livingston and Phil Salt. I guess the easiest place to start is, Craig, who have you heard of in that group?
Who have I heard of?
Joking aside, out of the whole squad, who are you looking forward to see you haven't seen before in England shirt?
I'll probably go Henry Brooks. Because, yeah, he's an exciting young bowler. He bowls absolutely rockets, I hear. His brother was on the Young Cricketers when I was obviously working at Lord's, and he's a lovely lad. So from that perspective, I'd like to see his brother do well. So, hopefully he gets a chance and does well. He was on the brink a couple of seasons ago and then got injured. So it's good that he's actually managed to get himself back in the mix. And then the other one is probably Tom Banton. We have seen him play, obviously, but you know, I think he's a special player. I think he's going to do very well for England in years to come.
Ravi, what about you?
For me, I'm really excited to see Sam Billings back in the squad. I think he was, you know, it's a shame that he wasn't involved in that World Cup squad. He was very much a part of everything in the lead up to it, and I think he had some injuries, I think, before for the World Cup, which sort of counted him out. But he's a really talented cricketer, and I'm looking forward to seeing him back in the fold again.
Given the amount of times he's been involved in the England setup now, is it getting to the point where it might be last chance saloon for him to really stake a claim in an England team?
I guess so. I think you look at the amount of the number of new players they've got in that squad, you'd certainly think that that's the direction they're perhaps going in. So yeah, I guess you're probably spot on there.
But equally, of course, he was vice-captain on the New Zealand tour of the winter, so they clearly think highly of him. Callum, who do you like the look of?
It's good to see Ben Duckett back in the mix. I think he got a bit of a rough time of it. Obviously, he's had a few off-the-field issues, but he also played against him last year. I don't know if you've ever seen a guy play spin like it. It was absolutely freakish what he was doing. I'll give you an example. I basically we had a deep cover out. And he reverse swept one into Fenner's car park, basically switched it, Chappers into Fenner's car park. So twice back-to-back sixes. So I've moved deep cover to deep point. He's then switched it in for six over extra cover. And I'm kind of captaining going, this is unbelievable. And it wasn't, they weren't even bad balls, they were literally what you'd defend. So he had a bit of a bad time of it in Bangladesh and India, but he played as like a spin specialist, and Ashwin had him a bit on toast, which I think he admits. But yeah, he's a bit of a freak when it comes to playing spin, so it'd be good to see him. And if he's thinking long term, I think he probably would get another go in the subcontinent if they had one day tours out there or something. So it should be good. And you said is Livingston in as well?
Yep.
Yeah. He's also a brilliant player.
I've actually put together an England team based on players, if they wanted to put probably the strongest 11 possible, they could do, even with the number of new names in this squad. You could go with Jason Roy, Johnny Bairstow, James Vince, Owen Morgan, Sam Billings, Tom Banton at six, then come with Liam Dawson, David Willey, Tom Curran, Adil Rashid and Saki Mahmood. Of course, the makeup of that side and the balance is probably off, but experienced players still in that side. But whether they will go with some of the younger players or the newer players will be interesting to see. On a personal note, looking forward to seeing Sam Hain. He's actually, I don't think anyone in the history books in cricket tops his average of 62.38 in List A cricket. He's got an outstanding record in the One Day Cup in England domestic competition. The next behind him after 62.38 is Kohli with 58. So it shows his form with the longer form at the white ball game. And he also got 122 for the Lions against Australia in the winter. So it'd be good to see him play. Also, Rhys Topley, honourable mentions, had lots of injuries. Now back at Surrey after taking 17 wickets for Sussex last summer in the Blast. So hopefully some fresh faces put on the light blue jersey of England and impress. A very, very different side to the one that won the World Cup a year ago this week. And it's just, imagine starting that new cycle of players ready for the World Cup in 2023.
From the Pavilion on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Right, the time has come, Craig, for you to reveal your fantasy slipcorn. How tricky was this?
Not too tricky, to be fair. Didn't give it too much thought. got all my guys in mind, so...
I'm glad our guests take deep thought about our features.
I'll start with my keeper.
Go on.
Which I thought I needed some comedy in the slip cordon, so yeah. I've gone with Lee Evans.
Lee Evans, media. Okay, yeah. He'd have a trouble not putting sweat or saliva on the
ball. Yeah, I was literally going to say that. Struggling.
probably not part of my social distancing slip cordon, but yeah, I mean, he's funny as heck. And my backup comedian was Trevor Noah. I'm not sure if you guys have heard of him.
Yeah.
South African comedian, very funny. First slip, gone for experience in David Attenborough. I just thought, obviously, being a very sort of a nature lover, I'd love to hear his stories. I'm sure he's got loads of interesting stories of close encounters with jaguars and pythons and whatever. So I'm sure he would entertain us.
I think, was it Alex Sears had him in, Callum? Was it Johnny?
I think so, maybe, one yeah. Yeah, one Ellison. Of them definitely. I feel like he'd give off like a Mike Brearley kind of vibe, that kind of good captain. Good captaincy figure.
My captaincy figure is the second slip, so I'll get to him afterwards.
We were joking that Attenborough will turn up in sort of beige chinos, white shirt, and have really sort of nice, I think he said quite rough hands that were able to take the ball quite nicely, given the experiences for nature.
He'd be chief ball shiner.
with Lee Evans next to him, it'd be quite a good combination.
Exactly. You see where I'm going with this now.
I see. You have thought about it.
No, okay. So second slip, I've gone for Eddie Jones.
Mm-hmm.
He would be my captain there. Obviously, just from a sports performance view, you know, I'd love to get his thoughts on pinnacle of sport and the mindset that goes behind, you know, World Cup winning sides and all that. That would have been interesting conversations to have.
Would that include a talk about the Japanese South Africa World Cup game a few years back?
Absolutely. What a game of rugby that was, but what a comeback as well. So yeah, slightly off topic, but that win for Japan was brilliant. But back onto the subject. So third slip, I've got Nelson Mandela, because what South African wouldn't have Nelson Mandela in their slip cordon? And then in gully, I've got Jonty Rhodes, who hands down best fielder to play the game. He was my idol growing up. Loved watching him play. Loved watching him bat. He wasn't the most talented batsman, but he was a hard worker, very, very busy at the crease. And to some way, like all three of, you know, us brothers, myself, Sean and Gary, we all idolized him growing up. We all sort of, we saw fielding as an enjoyment, as a very important part of the game. You know, we all threw ourselves around the field as much as possible. Obviously, not these days, given that we
say what's happened now.
Exactly. Thought I'd bring that up, but so obviously a really, really good fielder, and he would be my cricketer in the side as well.
Weren't tempted to go with a local player, someone at Foxton?
What, like Coleman?
Your choice.
I get enough of him during the season. Yeah, so that's it. Yeah, and then obviously I'd be standing there somewhere just racking everyone's brains and enjoying it. So I think I've got a nice balanced slip cord in there.
There's a lot of experience there between Attenborough, Jones and Mandela. A lot of three wise men almost standing at first, second and third. I'd be interested to hear the balance. Well, what the balance would be like between Evans and the other three. I think that might be quite a funny combo. All three of them putting him in check. I think it's a good combo. CP, well done. I like David Attenborough at first slip. A lot of calmness, I think he'll bring to the fold. Unlike our captain, Jason Coleman, where it's just anarchy a lot of the time.
I think Attenborough commentating as well would be nice. Touch.
I just could just imagine Lee Evans trying to have a laugh. Attenborough and Mandela telling their stories. And Eddie Jones just like, he's just an absolute serial competitor. Will not want anything other than 100% focus on the cricket.
I think he'd be good at finishing people there as well. I think Eddie Jones would definitely be the finisher of all of those guys.
Eddie Jones actually loves his cricket, so I think he will hold his own at second slip between Eddie Jones and John T. Rhodes. So John T. Rhodes would cover from gully all the way through to mid off. So that's my whole offside covered with him. And then Eddie Jones would nab anything from first to third slip. David Attenborough and Mandela would just talk to each other and entertain me. Lee Evans would throw in a joke every now and then. So I think it's a lovely balance.
He does fit the mould of like a busy keeper as well, doesn't he? Like with all his hand gestures and movements.
Oh, he'd be proper Harper behind the stumps. I'm not sure I'd want to bat with him behind the stumps.
Most akin to which cricketer in Whiting's?
Wow. Interesting one.
Who's that bloke from March that always finishes you?
What's his name? Adam Conyard. There we go. Adam Conyard. Lee Evans, Adam Conyard. Put off banter behind the stumps. There we go.
I'm sure the resemblance is uncanny. But no Ravi in your slip, Gordon Craig.
No, like I said, Foxton's fielding hasn't been great the last three seasons. Myself and Ravi included. I think Ravi can go mid off or mid on. Stay out.
That's an upgrade from third man to fine leg, I'll tell you that.
Craig, Ravi, it's been a pleasure chatting to you. Thanks very much for coming on. Go well when you start, well, this weekend for you, Ravi, and the 25th for you, Craig. But again, pleasure to have you on. Thanks very much for coming on, guys.
Thank you. Thanks for having
me. Thank you, Ollie and Callum. Thanks.
Cheers. Catch you soon.
Thanks, guys.
From the Pavilion on Cambridge 105 Radio.
You've been listening to the From the Pavilion Lockdown podcast, the last From the Pavilion Lockdown podcast of the season. Yes, as I said at the top of the show, next week we're back on air. We're back on Cambridge 105 Radio in our usual slot, Wednesdays at 6. That's because the cricket is back. Clubs kick off their action this weekend, which we'll be rounding up on next week's show and previewing the start of the East Anglian Premier League too. So make sure you join us. If you want to get in touch with us in the meantime, head over to our social media pages at FTP Cricket 105, both on Twitter and Facebook. Give us a follow. Let us know your fantasy slip corners, your England teams, all your opinions about cricket. You want to hear them. All that's left to say, until you hear from us next week, Wednesday at 6, don't miss it. Stay safe and well. Bye-bye.